your noontime look at the financial world. What's trending in Chicago business? The midday numbers. John has the Wintrust business lunch now.
Money. They're both billionaires is a wrong answer. It's 12:08. It's 12:08. This is WGN Radio's Wintrust business lunch. This is John Williams. Producer Pete is here too, and here we go. Start today with our friend John Beaver, the financial advisor. We'll talk about the markets, the economy, the interest rates. We'll also on the show visit with Jim Dahlke, the national editor at American Inno. We'll talk about the tech sector. And then Fast Company's AI decoded newsletter. We'll talk about AI and how that's in the space of journalism these days. That's all in this hour of the Wintrust Business Lunch. 1212 WGN, Wintrust Business Lunch. John Beaver, financial advisor, Phase 3 Advisory Services, a regular guest on this show, and today's another one of those days. Hi, John. Welcome back to the program.
Hi, it's good to be here. Glad to be on and share what's going on in this market rally.
Well, you know, it's funny because I was talking a little while ago about the state of the world, that 60% of voters don't think the U.S. is on the right track. And my opinion earlier was, I'm not exactly sure what that means, because I suggested that almost everything in the economy that you could hope for is in fact on the right track, that times are not bad. So I wonder what those people were talking about. That's a long way of saying, what are you talking about?
So what they may be talking about is inflation, which is still here, but not as big of a problem as it was. So today we've got the market making new highs. That's on the S&P 500. And it's interesting because the S&P 500 is making new highs, but it's not. It depends on how you calculate it. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. But in terms of the economy, yeah, it's actually in good shape right now. I think what people are feeling is they just go to the grocery store and their money doesn't go as far, and that really hurts. So what happens to the market here with us? Well, with inflation really having come under control, maybe not down to the 2% range that the Fed wants, we look around and look at other areas. And the biggest crack right now that we're seeing in the economy that could be a headwind for the stocks is business fixed investment just has gone nowhere. And every recession since World War II, except for COVID, was led by a drop in business fixed investment. So we're happy to see today the business survey, the NABE, actually showed executives think that there is going to be an uptick in their capital spending this year. So that could keep this thing going and keep us into a soft landing scenario, which actually I didn't believe last year. I didn't think we would end up in a soft landing, but here we may be here.
Business fixed investment, that means businesses investing capital resources into their companies?
Yes, yes. And the reason it might have been a little slow in the last year is because it's turned so much attention to AI and looking for improvements in their bottom line due to AI. Now, maybe a little early to look at that.
Well, and
we're still in the Fed. Yeah, go ahead.
But if you will, just comment on this. Interest rates, too. I mean, I can imagine the businesses didn't want to borrow to improve their businesses if they were paying whatever the number was at the time.
Exactly right. That's the other side of this. And the Fed has said, hey, don't get too excited about rate drops. They might not be here as soon as you think. Right now, the market's anticipating March. Sounds like the Fed is thinking more the summer. And here locally, Goolsbee, the Chicago Fed president, along with others, they're really trying to talk down these expectations for rate cuts this year from 6, which is what's anticipated, to maybe 3. But still, a rate cut is a rate cut, and that will be helpful for the economy.
Okay, so that's not a headwind, is it? I mean, lower interest rates, businesses have pent up need maybe to improve their operations. So these are good things, right?
That turns that into a good thing. Yeah, we don't need the 6 rate cuts, and I think that actually might be a mistake from an inflationary standpoint. So the tailwinds are looking really good, and that's the inflation rate is getting more nominal. We'll have another reading at the end of this week on the PCE indicator, which is what the Fed really likes to watch for inflation. Jobless claims are still looking decent. They're not ticking up. Although I will say this, we've had the ADP reports, we keep seeing revisions to the upside in the unemployment numbers, which is a little troubling, but it still stay on the whole. The numbers are low enough that that's not a problem at all. We got the 10-year yield that has backed up a little bit, but not very much. So it looks like maybe 4.5% is going to be that limit on the 10-year Treasury bond. And so that means we have the chance of maybe those coming down again. Our view is that by the end of the year, we may have mortgage rates down in the low sixes, which would, again, be good for the economy. So on the whole, there's a lot of other things we can look at on the positive side. But I think on the whole, we're looking at a generally positive year. But remember, it is an election year.
That would lend one to think what?
Volatility. So election years tend to be volatile for at least the first half of the year, and choppy maybe even as long as 9 months. But that volatility is your friend because it gives you opportunity to get into the market at a lower rate. Very good for dollar cost averaging. And then after the election, sometimes even a month or two before the election, the market starts to heat back up again, kind of understanding what the results of the election are going to be. So that sounds like a negative for the market, but on the whole, election years do end up by the end of the election year.
Well, I'm curious, too. Let's pick out a beer in a minute. Excuse me, John Beaver with Phase 3 Advisory Services. What about all the debt that we're holding right now, not just student loans but consumer credit? Talk to me about that after we check the markets. Let's go into the WGN Radio Newsroom. Here's Bob Kess, 1221. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. We're talking to John Beaver, financial advisor at Phase 3 Advisory Services. And despite some headwinds, he painted a somewhat optimistic picture about this year. What about all of the consumer debt out there? What's that going to do to the market?
We made a new high at about $5 trillion. But think about this. If the economy is growing, consumer credit would also be growing. So it's not a problem yet. What we want to watch for is the default rate. And default rates are increasing. They're back up to the level of 2012, but they're not to a troubling level yet. So it's just something to keep an eye on. So probably still another year or two to go on the upside. What we do watch, which is interesting, is to see these large cap, mega cap, the largest companies versus the rest of the large cap market and the divergence that we've seen in performance there. It's actually pretty significant over the last year.
Meaning what?
So let me describe it this way. So pick your favorite pie. Mine happens to be French silk. You're going to take that pie, you're going to cut it in half, two halves of this pie. So what we're looking at is the S&P 500 and what's called the S&P 500 cap weight, which means each company gets a slice of the pie based on how big the company is. So on the one half of the pie, you're going to cut that into 35 slices. On the other half of the pie, you're going to cut it to 465 slices. Now back to the half with 35 slices. Your first company is going to get a slice of the pie that's 7% of the whole pie, the next one 6%, the next one about 4%, and so on and so forth. So the largest six companies make up a quarter of the pie, and that creates concentration risk in your portfolio if you have any S&P 500 funds. Now, that's the S&P that we quote that on your show here, that we use in the industry, that you see in your 401k statement, that are in your S&P 500 funds, on your 401k statement. So you have a lot of concentration there into these six largest companies. And obviously, you know, the other half of the pie doesn't really count for much. It's the largest 50 companies that really make up the performance. This is really similar to what we had in the 1960s with the Nifty 50 craze. Mm. Well, here's what happens. There's another way to build this index, and that is to make each company an equal slice of the pie. And Invesco came up with this, they actually came up with a fund for this about 20 years ago, but this idea of equal weighting has been around for a long time. The equal weight S&P 500 beats the S&P cap weight over time. During the periods of time where it underperforms, the equal weight underperforms, it eventually catches up. And that period of underperformance can be as short as a year or two to about as long as 4 years. So we're in a period of time where there's an opportunity that's really easy. It's just statistical. And that would be to buy into the equal weight S&P 500 rather than the cap weight.
Yeah, and it sounds like they're due. Is it fair to ask what's the general economic health of those other 465 companies?
Yeah, it's still pretty good. In fact, we still have healing that's taking place after COVID and even after the financial crisis. So we see the upside there as being better than the S&P 500 cap weight, and partly because of this large company concentration. Now, again, this might not turn for a year or two yet. We don't know when it's actually going to turn, but the time to buy is when you can get in on the cheaper level. And we see the same thing with small cap versus large cap. Generally, over time, small cap beats large cap. But we've got an extended period of time here where small companies have actually underperformed and are presenting a really good opportunity there. So don't forget S&P equal weight and small cap in your 401k.
Well, John, I don't know that a lot of us know if we're doing that. I think we put money in one of those little boxes we checked. The HR person sent us an email, and I don't know if I'm doing that or not. John?
So that's where you can call your advisor and ask your advisor, but also on many of the 401k, in fact, most of them, they'll actually list these funds based on whether they're small cap, medium, or large cap. What you probably won't find is an S&P equal weight fund yet in the 401k plan.
Well, what about that? Well, so what do I do about that?
So you do that outside your 401k in your Roth IRA, which is a great idea because you get tax-free growth in your Roth IRA. Or even if you have to, outside of an IRA of any kind, just buy it in your name. Or if you've got joint accounts, buy it in a joint account, because the gains there, if they end up being long-term gains when you sell the position, are taxed at a lower rate.
And where do I get one of those things? Just click on Schwab or one of those houses like that?
Yeah, if you actually have a brokerage account, you can actually find it. You can actually talk to one of the representatives with that house and say, hey, tell me about the S&P 500 equal weight.
Should I think it through further? That is, equal weight sounds like putting all of your eggs in all of those baskets, or should I target certain sectors within the S&P?
So going into sectors, there's one sector I particularly like at this point in time in the cycle, and that is real estate investment trusts, REITs. Now, not the ones that, you know, you can't trade on the market. These would be ones that would be available on the market or in a mutual fund. In a rate cut environment, real estate typically performs quite well, and here we're talking about commercial real estate. When rates go up, that squeezes them because everybody's on basically short-term loans in real estate. Every 5 years, you get a reset on your rate. So as rates come down, it actually creates a better environment for the companies that buy, own, and manage real estate. So that looks good as a good opportunity. There's been a big drop in their prices over the last year and a half. They have recovered some, but I think that's a good opportunity. And I still like energy. Right now, out of favor because it's dropped in price, but I still like that opportunity and would continue to hold into that region, and doesn't really seem to be pricing in what's going on in the Red Sea.
With 3 to 6 potential rate cuts this year, it just seems to me like the Fed doesn't want to whiplash the economy. So wouldn't it make sense that they would be very conservative? They'd be closer to 3 rate cuts than 6 rate cuts.
Absolutely. And Jay Powell, I understand his favorite book that's on his desk or on his shelf is Paul Volcker's book. And basically his point was, don't make a mistake on lowering rates too quickly. Keep at it until you beat inflation to death. So that is the thinking of Jay Powell. And it seems to be the thinking of most of the Fed governors since they've come out in the last couple of weeks talking down the idea of 6 rate cuts this year.
And 2%, that's going to stay the target, huh, for the inflation rate?
Until they tell us otherwise, we have to believe what they say. Now, the question is that 2% or is that 2.9%? There's a big difference in this kind of an economy between 2 and 2.9. And the Fed wants to see persistency, which means probably at least 6 months at those levels, and we're still not there.
What's the trend been? I mean, I know it's gone down, but what are our numbers in the last few trends? How are we doing on that?
Yeah, so now we've leveled out on the declines, and really one of the things that's holding this up is what's called rental equivalent in real estate. There's a lagging indicator there in how it affects the consumer price index and inflation. And, it's really hard to read, but it looks like there should be some downward trajectory in inflation just from that indicator alone over the next couple of months. So it looks like we will break the 3% barrier sometime in the next 2 to 3 readings.
How will that be received?
I think it will be received positively and could continue to promote, a general upward trend in the market, again, amidst volatility because it is an election year. So if I had to paint the best picture, I think we probably have a modest rally. March could be where we start to run into trouble, and that would be both from an inflation standpoint and the Fed not dropping rates.
Yeah. And one last question for you, John. I got about 45 seconds left, but how important to all of this for the whole year is what happens on the real estate market? Rates come down and the properties start to turn again.
Yeah, somewhat. I don't think as big as we think it is, because already people have kind of adjusted to where rates are at right now. So if anything, just the least little drop in rates should free up some more homes, get a few more people moving. But I don't think it's going to be huge, because you still have a lot of retirees with mortgages at 2.9, 2.7, 2.9, 3, 3.1 that just don't want to go to anything else. So we have a lot of property that's waiting to be sold but might not be sold this year just yet.
Financial Advisor, Phase 3 Advisory Services, John Beaver. Nice to talk to you, John. Thanks for your insight.
You're welcome. Looking forward to next time.
Yeah, let's do it again. Still to come, Jim Dalkey would talk to us, the national editor at American Inno, about the tech scene, the investment money going that way. And we'll visit with Mark Sullivan, senior writer and author of Fast Company AI Decoded Newsletter. A Fast Company's AI Decoded Newsletter. It's about AI and journalism, and we'll do all of that after the news on WGN.
Hey, it's Lisa.